We're deposing Hunter Biden because he's a key witness in our investigation of President Joe Biden. Our committees have unearthed substantial evidence of President Biden and his family's corruption. The Bidens created 20 shell companies, most of which were created when Joe Biden was vice president. And for anyone who doesn't understand what a shell company is, and I'm talking to the Associated Press here, a shell company is a company with no assets or no known purpose. We've determined that the Bidens had 20 shell companies. The Bidens and their associates raked in over $30 million from China, Russia, Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Romania, and Democrat donors. 10 members of the Biden family, including Joe Biden, either participated or benefited from the family influence peddling schemes.
Well, we know that much. They keep saying, Democrats keep going, well, there's nothing impeachable. You guys haven't found anything impeachable yet. That's why it's called an inquiry. Don't let them make you think that, oh, well, they haven't found any. So let's just go ahead and it's done. That's what Democrats want you to think. Oh, well, they haven't found anything. It's an inquiry. And see, you would have seen this with the previous administration, but unfortunately, Democrats chose not to have an inquiry with the previous administration. Remember, they just walked right into impeachment. They didn't bother with any of this stuff. And they didn't even want to bother with any of this stuff because it was nothing more than just a witch hunt. Whereas there's actual stuff here, actual stuff and attempted, I mean, you know, potential wrongdoing. I mean, we're going to see all of that. So welcome to the show. Dana Lash here with you, top of this first hour. There's a few things that are happening today that we are keeping an eye on. And one of those things is, of course, obviously, this ongoing, you know, the hearing, the closed door hearing with Hunter Biden, because you have the first closed door hearing, and then maybe that's something that they'll have that is public. We'll see. But this is just like the initial thing. This is, you know, it's par for the course. But we'll have this. We also have the president who's getting an unannounced physical, I think. Isn't that what it is?
Is that what they're calling it?
Yeah, it's an unannounced physical. That's what
sounds like an emergency to me.
Do you think so, Kane?
I don't know. I mean, why would you unannounce, and why would you do a surprise physical then?
I mean, who doesn't do surprise physicals?
Right.
Everybody surprise.
Does it. Yay.
It's what everybody does.
Bend
yeah.
over.
Yeah. Well, so again, there you go. It's Wednesday. We're a hump day. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen across the country. You can watch the simulcast of the radio program, the video component as well. You can check all of that out on DirecTV Channel 347, YouTube, where we have all kinds of good stuff, all kinds of discussion that happens. We're going to get through it all. So anyway, like I said, you also have the president who has his weirdo surprise physical. The helicopter, so from what I understand, the press was just doing its thing, and the helicopter just showed up. There's the helicopter, just shows up, and then it whisks him away to Walter Reed. And he told them all as he was leaving, he was like, oh, I'm getting a physical, is what he said. He said, I'm getting a physical, and then he flew away. So all right, they have their cameras trained on that back door at Walter Reed. You think it's an emergency, though? He walked out to the thing, to the chopper.
Yeah. Could be.
Yeah, so we've got also of the shutdown stuff. We have the border visit that they're supposed to have. I wonder if it is like because he's supposed to go to the border tomorrow. And I do kind of wonder if it's like not like some kind of last minute thing, you know, where I don't know. We'll see. We'll talk about it. So got this, the Hunter Biden hearing. We also have the Supreme Court case the hearings that are, this is all about the situation with bump stocks. And we're going to talk about that later today, because again, it is just a variable. It's one of many, many variables that you can plug into that formula to deny rights or to deny any kind of due process. And we'll dive into all of that as well. So it's kind of a weird day because, you know, we've got all this stuff happening, the unannounced thing with the president. So, you know, we'll get in all of that. Oh, my gosh. And we still have the ongoing thing with Fulton County. Oh, and then we had the Michigan primaries last night, which I'm going to break some of that down because that was a little interesting. You realize for all of the discussion that we heard about the uncommitted voters, they were like, what, 12% of the vote? I don't think that they are as powerful as they're making themselves out to be, if I'm being really honest about it. I really don't think that they are as powerful as they're making themselves out to be. So we'll get into that as well. So a lot of, like, all over kind of the place to discuss stuff today. All over the place kind of stuff. So anyway, and if you get the email newsletter over at Substack, my chapter and verse newsletter, then you know what's on deck today. So first and foremost, this Hunter Biden hearing. He apparently is being he's a snot in there, apparently. Very defiant and argumentative is how it was described. Are you shocked? I'm not shocked. Who's shocked? You're so smug today. What? What's up? He's over there going, mm-hmm. What do you mean?
Mm-hmm. It's true. I mean, I've been watching all this right before the show, just seeing everything. The stuff from SCOTUS, too, by the way. I know you'll get to that later, mm-hmm. but wow.
I just feel as though, and I get it that I guess it's like a defense mechanism for him. But it just kind of feels like maybe you shouldn't be so snotty to the people who hold your future in their hands, because this, like I said, is an inquiry into all of the, you know, all of the evidence that they were able to get off of that laptop. This is an inquiry that's designed to get more information. They're wanting to ask him about stuff. I mean, this is not something that they're going to walk out and declare, okay, we have all of that. They're investigating. That's what this whole process is. It's an investigation. Democrats don't know that because they didn't do it the first time around. They just walked right into an impeachment. So this, I don't know for him being, and it's a part of a strategy, I think, from their legal campaign, but this defiant, you know, how dare you sort of stuff. He read this statement because they can't have cameras in there. But he read this statement wherein he said it was a politically motivated witch hunt, and he accused Republicans of just trying to go at his dad, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But again, remember, all of this stuff came out not because of Republicans, but because banks literally ticked off a suspicious activity report. They were the ones who actually first notified anybody of what was happening, because they were the shell companies in the Biden family. They were moving all of this cash around, playing a game of cups with it. That's what ended up happening. And that's how they ended up having this situation. So it wasn't Republicans that kickstarted it. It literally was these suspicious activity reports that the banks, you know, they sounded the alarm because it looked like it was some sketchy behavior. So in conjunction with the laptop stuff, that was the ongoing. You also had the investigation. They were looking at him for his taxes. And so all of this stuff was like a perfect storm before, honestly, even all the laptop stuff blew up. And then when all of that started leaking out, there was a lot of information in there that corroborated a lot of the suspicions that people had that, again, were brought on by the banks. A lot of the suspicions that people had regarding his behavior and perhaps, you know, criminal activity. But the fact that he's already, I mean, they sit here and they, oh, there's not an impeachment charge for, you know, Joe Biden. I mean, we already know that there's enough there to beg the question. And if there's enough there to beg the question, particularly in the realm of politics, you're going to get something. So, yeah, he had his statement out and he keeps saying that he didn't involve his father in his business. I will remind you, was it the whistleblower? Let me open my notes here because this just froze. I had to restart it. My bookmarking system. Otherwise, I'd have like stacks of papers in my office and it would look like a serial killer thing. Joe Biden had dinners with Hunter's business partners. So how are you not involved in your dad's business? Right? How are you not involved in his business? You had dinner with his business associates, not one either. So that there's a lot of questions that surround this. And I think it's perfectly reasonable to ask. And I also think that it's perfectly reasonable to expect an answer as well. I mean, good heavens, this is, you know, it's not that difficult. So in the meantime, we have this. I told you that he's at Walter Reed. Tomorrow he's expected to go to the border. So he is at Walter Reed getting a physical exam. Now, a couple of weeks ago, during a press conference, KJP did say that he was going to be getting an examination. So there, that he was overdue. Her words were that he's overdue. That's what she had said. So, I mean, okay, I get a little bit. So that's why I don't necessarily think it's an emergency. I do think the timing is interesting because he's scheduled to go to the border tomorrow. So I think that they're just making sure that he's tip top and maybe, you know, giving him an IV of whatever Hunter's on to make him look so suspicious and, you know, tweaky all the time, you know, cocaine, you know, to give him. I think that they're getting him tip top for that. So he's at Walter Reed. They said it was a standard physical exam, but cognitive, and there's no cognitive anything involved with it. Pretty much it. They haven't really said anything else. They're going to be, I'm sure, you know, checking his heart rate, you know, oxygen levels, all that stuff. And then I'm sure they'll have the live feed as he leaves Walter Reed. And then tomorrow is going to be Border Palooza because they're both going to be, if Trump and Biden are both going to be at the border. I want to get into the Michigan stuff. There's just a lot I need to break down with you guys with all of this. These are the top stories right now. Then we have the Michigan primary. And the Michigan primary, I told you the only reason I was watching this was for Democrats. And I want to break down that uncommitted thing because I don't think that there's enough of a pushback there to actually threaten Biden's. I think that they're just trying to make a lot of noise over nothing. And I don't see the numbers there. It was barely 12% of the vote. And the way that they were talking about it was that it would be like half of the vote. And it really wasn't. It wasn't enough to move the needle. Is it enough to come into play in a general election? I actually don't think so either. And I'm going to explain to you because I was looking at the data last night and this morning. So I'll talk. We'll get into all of that. We also have, like I said, the Second Amendment case that we're going to discuss. Michael Cargill, who's the guy who filed this. He's behind all of this. This is the bump stock case, commonly known as the bump stock case. We're going to discuss this and its implications on your Second Amendment rights, all kinds of stuff. So you don't want to miss. We're all going to have to go buy gold because the world's ending. You want to be able to have, you know, an actual physical thing that you can touch that as a hedge to your all of this stuff with inflation, government spending. The gold IRA field, it can be confusing. And so if you're looking for a precious metals company to trust, it's not easy to do. One of the reasons why I like Goldco is because they make it really easy. They send you this whole awesome kit. It's that walks you through everything. It's a one-of-a-kind gold IRA kit for individual buyers, and it explains the whole economy, how gold IRAs work, and they just want to make it easy to understand so you can get the benefit of owning physical gold and silver. And they understand too that precious metals ownership is a very important part of your overall retirement savings strategy. They have an unmatched customer service, zero complaint record, first rate service, and there's no pressure at all, no fees either. And you can learn how to possibly get $10,000 in bonus silver. Ask about their highest buyback guarantee. Protect your family's financial future and freedom, and get started today at danalikesgold.com. Get your free gold kit from Goldco and learn how to get $10,000 in bonus silver. That's danalikesgold.com.
Yes, it's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right, so first up for our headlines here, we've got almost a third of Americans, this is a poll via Reason, say that the First Amendment goes too far. Because these people are a bunch of pansies. I just feel like if I was a tyrant, I would do surveys like this, and everyone who surveyed wrongly, I'd round you up. The survey found that two-thirds of morons believe that America is on the wrong track when it comes to free speech. It's a foundation for individual rights and expression, the FIRE group. It's a new poll. They say, yeah, a third of people that they surveyed, according to their press release, are absolute morons. They went to Dartmouth, and they asked 1,000 morons at Dartmouth about their opinions on free speech, and a third of them believe this. They said only 25% of respondents agreed that the right to free speech was very or completely secure. Those are the people who are smart. The rest of them are walking abortions. That's what they are, walking mental abortions. I mean, you're almost going to convince me. I mean, I'm all for late term if it means that those people can be candidates. Apple is going to wind down the electric car effort. Yeah, because everyone is. It's not just Apple. They're canceling their work on EVs. After the Odyssey, this decade-long project, they're actually putting everything into AI is what they're looking at. They're not looking at EVs anymore. They're winding that down because, again, everyone is. Union Square in San Francisco, the Macy's store, is amongst many slated to close. Now, this is like a combination of a couple of things. Macy's isn't doing well, and they're switching to more higher end like Bluemercury and Bloomingdale's. They've tried a boutique concept as well in a number of different areas across the country that fared better than the traditional department Macy's store. So that's kind of part of this also, because San Francisco is full of needles and feces. And nobody wants to be stepping over, nobody wants to be stepping over that stuff on their way to go and make a purchase. Nobody. Let's see. CNN has paid Don Lemon almost $25 million in total to settle his ouster. So he gets paid anyway. He has the last laugh. There you go. Google Gemini invented fake reviews smearing a book about political biases. This is Peter Hassan. Had this piece where he noted that their Gemini, they actually slammed his book. They said the book was criticized for lacking concrete evidence and relying on anecdotal information, except it didn't. And it's completely insane that Gemini spat out summaries of four negative. They basically like cribbed different words from different people and made up false reviews. That's what they did. That's what Google Gemini did. I know. Peppa Pig, which I've never watched, is enforcing unhelpful stereotypes with questionable messages about gender equality and behavior, say UK child behavioral experts. And US parents say that the show is turning their kids into brats. So Peppa Pig is apparently like the British version of Caillou, Canadian Caillou. If you're unfamiliar with Caillou, Caillou was a bald brat from Canada who whined about everything and really just, I don't know, this child. So the Peppa Pig series, they say that it's just teaching wrong. It's like brainwashing kids. It says that Peppa Pig has an attitude problem. She's a brat. Her mom is dumb and her father's useless. And it has these very dangerous stereotypes. I just can't believe kids watch this, because it literally looks like something that a 4-year-old drew with an iPad. Right? I don't get it. I don't understand the appeal of this. And a massive grocery chain merger has hit a wall. The FTC and 9 states have filed suit to stop Kroger and Albertsons from merging. We have more on the way. Stick with us. Have you ever gotten undressed only to realize that you were in front of an open window? How did that make you feel? Exposed? Vulnerable? Well, going online without using ExpressVPN is like doing that, being naked in front of a floor-to-ceiling window. And of course, there are creepers and weirdos out there who can see and record everything that you do online, even in the so-called private browsing model. So the next time that you go online in private browsing or in incognito mode, look at the fine print, because you'll see that your browsing activity is actually visible to a ton of people, like your internet provider, your school, your employer. Because when you use the Wi-Fi at work or at a hotel, or heaven forbid an Airbnb, or even at home, the owners of the Wi-Fi can see everything that you're up to. So imagine everybody getting a look at all the stuff you've ever clicked on. Like if I go to Daily Mail and I read all the celebrity trash, people will see that and they're going to judge me when I tell them all I do is read things like Forbes or Wall Street Journal. So use ExpressVPN. It's an app that sends 100% of your traffic through their encrypted servers, so your browsing history cannot be seen by anyone. It's like, you know, an actual incognito mode, you know, one that works. And ExpressVPN works on all your devices, so you can use your phone, your TV, your iPad, your computer, browse, shop, watch, download whatever you want without the entire world knowing what you're doing. I mean, I think it's important to use ExpressVPN because, you know, I care about my privacy, and I'm pretty sure you do about yours as well. So make sure you protect your online activity with the VPN that I trust to keep me private. Visit expressvpn.com/Dana today. That's expressvpn.com/Dana to get an extra 3 months free. ExpressVPN.com/Dana.
Don't believe the BS. What's next for the Biden propaganda machine? Bidenomics went over like a lead balloon. Ahead of Biden's State of the Union address, he plans to address shrinkflation while blaming grocery store chains for gouging its customers.
Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Ready to grow your intellectual Rolodex? Download the Dana Show podcast and join the ranks of those who refuse to settle for the same old boring content on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Weapon to fire. That's what function of the trigger means. But to determine that, we need to first determine what exactly the trigger is before we can consider what is the function of the trigger. And there will be certain types of devices, like this motorized trigger device in United States against camp, where the trigger actually is changed, because you're no longer pulling the curved metal lever to set off the weapon. Instead, you're flipping some switch that starts a motor.
Now I'm completely lost. The trigger is not doing anything. It's the person doing something. And it's the person choosing on an M16 whether they're going to keep the switch on semi-automatic or put the switch on automatic and turn the M16 into a machine gun. And on a machine gun, it's not the trigger that does this, it's the pressure that the shooter is using to hold the trigger down that permits it to keep going.
That's what causes the trigger to function.
Well, that's what the government is saying, which is you're not looking at what the trigger is doing. You're looking at what the shooter is doing, and is he using a force, keeping the gun down, keeping the trigger down, or holding the bump stock and letting it shoot back and forth in an automatic recoil? Those are not things that changes the automatic nature of the firing.
It still has nothing to do with what the shooter does. The question is, what does the trigger do when it functions? And if the trigger allows more than one shot to fire per function of the trigger, what is the single function of the trigger?
But
and
on a the trigger you're saying can be a button. So why can't it be the bump stock that's forcing this thing automatically in a recoil motion to go back and forth?
Because that's not how it works.
Fire the weapon. The bump stock is just a case.
So this is, I want to bash my head against a wall. Now I'm in a bad mood. I was actually in a decent mood. Now I'm not. What?
Sorry.
Yeah, thanks, Kane. Kane's like, you're going to hear something that's going to really make you mad. I'm like, great. So this is the Supreme Court bump stock case. And remember, under the, this is one of the things, this was an argument that a lot of people had with the previous president, by the way, because they had the bump stock ban. And we're going to have Michael Cargill, the guy who's at the, it's his case. It's the guy at the center of this. He's going to be on the show a little bit later on today. It's Cargill v. Garland. And these are their oral arguments in this case. And what the case is doing is challenging the ban, this administrative edict, this ban on bump stocks that was implemented by the Trump administration and further imposed by the Biden administration. And they were relying on AFT, their interpretation of how it works and what it is. I was reading earlier, actually, I think I have it linked previously. Dave Capel, he's an attorney. He filed an amicus brief in the case. And it's on behalf of nine U.S. senators, obviously, literally all Republicans, and the Independence Institute, a bunch of historians and all of this stuff. What he says is that, and this makes sense, but I also think that we have to be careful with this kind of stuff, because I think that this could be implemented as a formula. And I understand what Dave Capel is arguing here. He's saying that the case itself is not a 2A, Second Amendment challenge, that it is an administrative challenge, that it is about the alcohol, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, Explosives, ATFs, their interpretation of a federal statute. Because remember, when the bump stock thing first came about, ATF actually said, no, this is okay, because it was created as a way to aid veterans who had been disabled in combat, to aid veterans into being able to still use their firearms. It was invented as a disability aid for that. And I always wondered, like, why wouldn't that be protected by the Americans for Disabilities Act? I'm curious about how that fits in there. Anyway, but there were two instances in which individuals had petitioned the ATF to reclassify this aid, this disability aid, to make it basically an NFA item, meaning that it goes under the National Firearms Act. So whenever you hear somebody say NFA item, that's what that means. It means you got to have the tax stamp in order to buy it, all that other goofy stuff. So, I mean, I've shot with a bump stock before. I just think it's an ammo waster. It really is. But I mean, there are actual disabled veterans that they put it to use. I mean, clearly I'm not one of those things, so I don't need it. And I just don't prefer it. I mean, it doesn't convert a firearm and change the way that the firearm works or the way that it's put. It doesn't do any of those things. This is about trigger engagement, ultimately. But anyway, the ATF, twice they were petitioned, twice they were asked, well, they shouldn't be, you shouldn't be able to have these things. And they said that it was fine. And then they turned around and they're saying now it's not fine anymore. And they did a total 180. And I just think that this is going to go the way of, you have an entity that exceeded its authority. And that's why Capel argues that this is, it's a fight over administrative law. And that they're trying to reinterpret a statute from the 1934 National Firearms Act. And that's, you know, that's, it's interesting to hear the justices try to wrap their heads around how not only firearms work, but also how firearms are different in that, okay, well, this is select fire capability. This is full auto. This is semi-auto. I mean, there's a reason why language is incredibly important when you're talking about this issue. And it's like the left makes language like the be-all, end-all, and then they get upset when you actually have to follow the rules that they established. And it's not, people aren't nitpicking words and trying to one-up other people about their knowledge of this. The purpose of being correct with your language is because certain laws are invoked literally depending upon the language that is used. And that's what people need to realize. You can't just go out and say, oh, somebody was using a quote-unquote assault weapons. The only time that's actually ever been used in any kind of government literature was like this old field army guy. I wrote about this in one, I'm trying to remember which book it was, one of my previous books. I had a whole thing on this. And they mentioned assault weapon. It's kind of used almost to mean a modern sporting rifle, but it's not, it's a made up term. It's a made up term by people who want you to think that every black colored rifle is super scary, and it's dumb, but it's, you kind of have to be careful because they're also baiting you into accepting the arena that they have established so that they can have this debate on their grounds instead of in the grounds of reality and how basic firearms work. So the whole point is that the argument here is that you have the government that is misinterpreting a federal statute, and that the next step is that if they can declare this piece literally magically changes this semi-automatic into a fully automatic, and you're just going to go with that definition, and you're a federal agency, that you are literally a heartbeat away from saying that semi-automatic firearms, period, are all machine guns. And that was actually what some of the debate was touching on as well. So we're going to keep an eye on this because the issue, Dave Capel had written that the two issues in Cargill versus Garland is the, as I was telling you, just the dispute over the federal interpretation. That's the statutory interpretation, he says. And the second is the interpretation of the statute at issue. So the interpretation by the ATF and then the basic interpretation just as is. And so that's kind of what they're going off of. I would say, I know a lot of people are speculating on Twitter. I think some of these justices are way more careful than others. And some of them are very much to the rule of the law. I know Amy Coney Barrett was making some people mad. What was the decision that she had? Just was it a trans thing? I can't even remember now. It was the decision, the Supreme Court decision that she had just a little bit ago. And she was, I think some conservatives were angry with her because she was legislating. It was a case that was about a statute, not the actual issue being debated. And that was how she interpreted. That's how she rendered her decision. And I think we've got to be careful of that because she's also very, very 2A on this. She's the justice that when she was in the circuit court was one of the very few people that I've actually heard in our justice system argue that your natural rights cannot be forfeit by anything. And that had to do with a case of a guy who had He was basically involved in mail order fraud. And because he had used the mail, it bumped it up to a felony. And he was trying to argue that it was a nonviolent crime. Therefore, he shouldn't have his Second Amendment rights forfeited. And she actually sided with him. And she was going off a very strict following of basic constitutional law. And it's going to be, I'm really interested in seeing how she responds to all of this. Listening to Sonia Sotomayor, and that was the audio that we played coming in, I want to gouge my ears out. Jiminy Christmas, are you serious? It's not that hard to understand this. These people don't even understand the basic operations of a firearm. They don't understand how it works. I think if you're a moron on the issue, why are you weighing in on it? Why? And that goes for all these lawmakers that are out there. If you don't know enough about it, shut up. Excuse yourself from the national debate. The world does not deserve your hot take. You are not owed a hot take. You are not owed an audience for your hot take. That's 99% of Twitter, by the way. So we're going to have Michael Cargill on later today to discuss this. Now, this news just came in. Mitch McConnell is stepping down as the Senate Republican leader in November. This was announced by the guy, pistol braces is what I'm talking about. There's so much stuff happening right now, and it's me processing everything. Thank you, Lorraine. Pistol braces were the things that were designed for the vets. The bump stocks, although the bump stock thing was also, I still think it's an ammo waster. Anyway, but you should be able to have it, bottom line. Mitch McConnell stepping down, Senate Republican leader in the job after a record run. He turned 82 last week. This literally just came in also. This was broken by the guy doing his biography. So that, and I guess that he just leaked that from the biography that he's working on, the guy doing his biography. So he gave no reason for the timing of this decision. He just cited the recent death of his wife's sister and said that the end of his contributions are closer than he would prefer. And he said that that was it. That was pretty much it. He hasn't given like a specific reason, but it's going to be in November. He's stepping down. I would say, obviously after the election, I think. But wow, the Senate isn't. Can I just be the Republican Senate? Who are they going to have step up? Are you going to have Cornyn? Thune? Who's going to be the number two guy now? Who's going to be stepping up to take McConnell's place? That's a whole other discussion. Goodness. So this day turned out to be very boring and not very crazy. It's a lot of stuff. So that just happened. We're following the Hunter Biden stuff. You have the president who's getting the quote unquote non-emergency physical that it was just unannounced. That's taking place. We're following the SCOTUS stuff. We have the shutdown that's looming on Friday. Houses, they're not in session.
Hi, I'm Erica, an English major at Hillsdale College. Here's Hillsdale President Dr. Larry Arnn with a Constitution Minute.
The human soul is made to learn, and the highest things of life are the best things to learn. One of these, it turns out, is the way we govern ourselves, and one of the best examples of that is the Constitution of the United States. It explains what our government should look like and how it should function to best protect our rights. It was created to give us the freedom to make choices about the way we wish to live. Unfortunately, most colleges and universities today fail to teach our Constitution. When they do, they often denigrate it. This is dangerous because it is impossible to preserve our liberty if we don't understand where it comes from and how to protect it. Having a proper civics education is essential to preserving our freedom.
To learn more and get a free pocket Constitution, visit ConstitutionMinute.com.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
We have been doing work to promote voter participation for students. And, for example, we have, under the Federal Work Study Program, now allow students to get paid through federal work study to register people and to be nonpartisan poll workers. As we know, this is important for a number of reasons. One, to engage our young leaders in this process and activate them in terms of their ability to strengthen our communities. We have been...
So, what? Really?
Yeah.
Okay. There you go. They just don't even care anymore. There you go.
Yeah. That one-two punch of forgiving the loans and then paying them for votes. I mean, that's what forgiving the loan was. I mean, you're paying for votes.
That's, yeah, because it's not even, I mean, I hate even the phrase forgiving, even to quote them on it, because it's exactly not, it's a vote buying scheme. It's a complete vote buying scheme. Welcome back to the program, Dana Lash with us. That is your favorite person ever, as you know. That's Kamala Harris, who was talking about, paying people to vote. And then that's, yeah. I mean, it is what it is. Good heavens. So, days of these United States, I tell you. Mitch McConnell is also speaking on the floor, and we'll bring you some of that. He said it is going to be after the election when he steps down. It made sense, but you know, I just wanted to make sure before, you know, we said anything else, I just wanted to make sure. So he's waiting till after the election to step down. And so the three names that apparently keep getting mentioned, now nothing's confirmed. I want you to understand this, but just the names that people are saying is maybe John Barrasso, John Cornyn, and the Johns. Oh my gosh. Juan, I'm going to need a completely inappropriate graphic for this. The gauntlet has been thrown, Juan. Gauntlet has been thrown. The Johns. So, that's... I'm going to have that conversation. Get ready to get screwed, America. All right, we got a whole other hour on the way. It's madness here today. The Dana Show. Stick with us. Have you seen any of those viral videos, the ones that show aisles stacked with emergency food supplies in stores? It kind of makes you wonder, like, what do they know that you don't? Well, you already know how I feel about being prepared myself. So why bother with the hassle of stores, which you know just mark up all their prices, when you can order directly and save? With Wise Food Storage, you're guaranteed access to delicious, high-quality food exactly when you need it the most. Visit wisefoodstorage.com and enter code Dana in the search bar to unlock exclusive deals just for you, like their current offer, the buy one, get one free on their 72-hour survival food kit. Not only that, but Wise Food Storage offers fast and free shipping on most orders. With their remarkable 25-year shelf life, these provisions will be ready for you whenever the need should arise. So instead of endlessly doom-scrolling through all the videos, wondering what catastrophe could be next, take action and secure your food supply today at wisefoodstorage.com. Type Dana in the search bar for exclusive deals. That's wisefoodstorage.com and use code Dana.
There'll be other times to reminisce. I'm immensely proud of the accomplishments I've played some role in obtaining for the American people. Today is not the day to discuss all of that, because as I said earlier, I'm not going anywhere anytime soon. There are many challenges we must meet to deliver for the American people, and each will have my full effort and attention. I still have enough gas in my tank to thoroughly disappoint my critics, and I intend to do so with all the enthusiasm with which they become accustomed.
And there you have it, Mitch McConnell. After November, after the election, he is stepping down as leadership in the Senate. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen coast to coast. You can stream the radio program. Channel 347 DirecTV is the channel that you can watch the simulcast on. You can also catch it on YouTube, where there's discussion, Facebook, all kinds of good stuff. A lot of stuff happening today. So Mitch McConnell stepping down. He's announced this, that it's going to be after the election. And he said it's time, I guess, for a newer and younger generation. So this is just breaking. He's stepping down as the Senate GOP leader. He's 82 years old. He's going to serve out the rest of his term. He's making the formal announcement. He made it today before the Senate. And he had said that it's an underappreciated talent to know when it's time to move on to the next chapter. He mentioned Reagan in his remarks, and he said that it has nothing to do with the health problems that he has had in the past several years, but that is the latest. And then people are going to start talking about, obviously, this is going to be to come, who's going to be the next Senate GOP leader? Who's going to take over? The Johns? Thune? Cornyn? Barrasso? Who? We'll get to that discussion. Also today, the Second Amendment, the opening arguments, or the oral arguments, sorry, for the Cargill v. Garland, the Bumstock case, before the Supreme Court today. And I was looking at some of the notes of what the, and Kane's been listening to the arguments as well. I said last hour that this case is being argued, it's a challenge to the ATF's interpretation of an existing federal statute within NFA. And I know that some people want this to be argued as like a pure Second Amendment issue, but I got to tell you, even listening to some of the more conservative justices on this court, hearing and then reading some of their quoted remarks about this, I'm actually kind of glad that it's a statutory argument and not an argument just broadly on the Second Amendment, because I don't think that they understand the technology or understand the mechanics enough to actually make a decision broadly on such a natural right with such a clearly demonstrated, limited understanding of how this works. And I know some people are like, why didn't they just put it all out there? Why didn't they just? I'm actually kind of glad, and I think you should be too. Especially when we heard some of the stuff that Sonia Sotomayor was saying. What else do you have over there, Kane? I mean, I was even, there was a quote that I'd read. Kavanaugh had asked about legislative or other history about the function of the trigger. Because again, it's like trigger engagement. And if basically it was a phrase that meant something different in the 30s with NFA than, you know, than it does today. And there's just a couple of things in here, because they were fighting over the history of legislation, which I don't think is an area of debate that we need to be in with this particular case. It just is wild to me. It's just wild to me, because Alito said, well, why would you ban machine guns but not bump stocks? And they were trying to argue that some of them actually think that somehow it makes the bullets come out faster. I'm not even, just to layman's terms. What do you have? I'm gonna throw myself off my roof.
I think this is Sotomayor too, though. But
have to put.
Let's just
pressure.
Listen to some of the stuff.
Neither necessary nor sufficient to fire arguments. The trigger is the device that initiates the fire.
Here's what I'm trying to say. I appreciate your going down this road of hypotheticals with me. But if pushing one button and holding a trigger is a machine gun, then a device that works by pushing the barrel, the front of the gun, essentially, I don't know about these things, and holding the trigger, seems again to me to essentially do the same thing. And that is how everybody uses these devices. Like, I mean, maybe you could use the device differently, but the entire point of this device is that you exert forward pressure and you have your finger on the trigger, and then a torrent of bullets shoots out. So I don't understand why it's any different.
It is different.
Are you serious? I mean, they're talking about the cycling rate. And isn't the stuff that technically that they were talking about? I mean, I don't want to get too in the weeds with you. I'm like, are they talking about stuff with the spring or stuff without a spring? I mean, no, I got a lot of.
It's actually pretty simple. I mean, the bump stock does nothing to the trigger.
Exactly.
And that's literally the argument. And this is what SCOTUS is doing.
I mean, it's still about one squeeze versus a squeeze per. Yeah, but select fire three-round burst is still NFA. So, and NFA, whenever you guys hear me say that, for those of you who are not big, giant firearm or firearm law nerds, it's the National Firearms Act of the 30s, and that was instituted after Capone's little fight with the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. So that's how that happened. And here's something important to note as well. Fully automatic firearms were never totally banned. I know a lot of people try to fight over the semantics of this, but basically, if you pay your tax stamp, then you can have a full auto. However, getting a new full auto, you have to get an old one. So that's where a lot of people say, well, you can't get a new one. That's effectively a ban. I understand that, but I feel like we're getting in the weeds on the issue. And the reason that I don't want to wholeheartedly go up and high five someone saying that this was banned is because then the left goes, okay, well, how many firearms then are used with full auto? And then you have a whole other argument that you've opened up because you didn't strategize enough with defense of this one. So I feel like they could have pushed back a little bit more on the cycling rate because you're comparing the mechanics of literally two different things. And he did a little bit, but I mean, I think it because the they're trying to argue that the accelerated rate of fire using a bump stock is the same thing as a full auto, which it is emphatically not.
Right, and that's what SCOTUS throughout this entire part that I was listening to seems to be sitting. They're sitting at this idea that the bump stock is making a gun a machine gun, and it's not. It does nothing to the trigger. It absolutely does nothing. And depending on how you hold the weapon itself, it also could do nothing, the bump stock. Mm-hmm. So there's that.
Yeah. My question, and earlier last hour, I stepped on myself because I was rolling around three different cases in my head, the pistol brace case, the bump stock, and then Cantor v. Barr, with regards to, that was Amy Coney Barrett's decision in that case that had to do with whether or not a natural right could be forfeit. And, you know, you have to prove, you know, a level of repeat violence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The pistol brace rule went the way of being determined. It was determined that they exceeded their bounds, and it was, you know, they rejected it because it was a federal agency that was doing Congress's job and overstepping its bounds. And that really, to have an effective rule on this, it has to come via legislation with Congress. And this case focuses on the statutory interpretation. It is a fight not whether the ATF had the authority to do this. It isn't a fight over anything but the statutory interpretation and then getting clarification on it. But I am just wondering, I'm kind of curious as to why that argument wasn't made. And we're going to talk to Michael Cargill coming up. He's going to be joining us on the program. And he's in our, third hour. He's owner of Central Texas Gunworks. And this is literally his case. And he's going to talk to us about this. Because as I said, I understand that some people were like, well, it was a problem of his attorneys to not make this like a full two-way issue. I actually disagree with that. And I disagree with it because you hear the justices, and I've read notes even, and pull some of this up because this was Kavanaugh, where they were focusing on like the legislative history and then trigger engagement and all of that. I just feel like, honestly, even the conservative justices, you can try to, I mean, you can be as constitutionalist as you want, but if you don't understand how something works, that's an issue. And I just feel like too many of them do not have enough of an understanding of how the mechanics of this works to actually make a decision on that has a broad two-way application as opposed to one that's just specifically focused on, you know, a statutory fight. Now, that actually may end up hurting Cargill's case because that's going to be, and I can see why they're trying to move them into this machine gun territory. And the reason I bring up Cantor v. Barr is the more progressive justices, they don't want to see, they're like, oh, we don't want to see machine guns in the hands of criminals, etc. Well, okay, that's such a stupid, full, goofy statement because you're presupposing that people who actually want fewer restrictions are in fact wanting criminals to be in possession of firearms. It's a Mott Bailey stupid conflation made by people who can't articulate a decent defense for their position because they rely fully on emotion and not fact. And I don't want them to get into that area as too much either. I don't know. It can be a tricky thing. And everyone's a lawyer on Twitter. That's my favorite thing. People who don't even know how the hell this stuff works. They don't even know they never shot with a bump stock. They don't know what a pistol brace is. They never read, you know, the decision of Cantor v. Barr. They don't know any of this stuff. Everybody's a lawyer on Twitter. Oh, well, their defense team should have done this. I'm just curious as to why they specifically took this perspective. And like I said, we're going to talk more about that. Now, I wanted to get in. I got so much stuff. I wanted to get into, let me pull this up, Michigan. The primary, I'm not talking about the Republican primary results, blah, blah, blah. I'm bored with that. I'm talking about the uncommitted folks in Michigan. Now, there was a lot of, you heard a lot of stuff going up into this primary about this, and we're going to deep dive here coming up, because they were saying you had, I mean, you have the biggest, what is it, the biggest Arab population in the United States is in Dearborn, Michigan. It's in Michigan, it's in Dearborn. And the voting demographic, that particular demo, was upset with Biden because of his position on the war that Gaza, that Hamas declared on Israel. And they didn't think Israel should be able to defend themselves. And they want a ceasefire, ignoring the fact that there was a ceasefire on October 6th. And they said, basically, their whole, Rashida Tlaib's sister is the head of this movement, this uncommitted movement there. You're surprised, I know. She's the head of this movement. And they were saying that they were going to jeopardize Biden's ability to either win Michigan in the general or even pull a significant enough showing in the primary, but it barely like made 12% of the vote. Can we have a discussion about this? I feel like the media is blowing this out of the water. So we're going to talk about this here coming up. Our partners over at Kel-Tec, the Sub-2K. This is great, a great company, family-owned values. Kel-Tec just does stuff. You know, they're very innovative. And the Sub-2K Gen 3 version, this is a 9mm carbine. You can fold it right in half. Previously, you had to remove your optics. You had to detach all your stuff to fold it in half, but you don't have to now. That's one of the upgrades with the Gen 3. It's a simple twist and fold motion of the patent-pending rotating fore end. Either direction, folds it in half just as quickly and easily deploys it. They also have a couple of other upgrades to this as well. Upgraded aluminum trigger, light and 5-pound pull, upgraded action, even have a new chamber indicator, and all made in America, family-owned business and values with Kel-Tec at their best. So make sure you check it out. It reads as sub-2000, but it's the sub-2K Gen 3. And to learn more about it, visit KeltecWeapons.com. That's KeltecWeapons.com. Tell them Dana sent you.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Wendy Williams fans are slamming Lifetime's sick treatment of her as the documentary films a lot of stuff that probably shouldn't have been. Feels like she's really been exploited here. I got to say, for people who don't know, my very first television anything was with Wendy Williams. She had me on her show. I was on her show a couple of times, and she actually talked about guns. We had a whole conversation with Wendy Williams on her show about firearms. She was always very nice, always very gracious. I have not a bad thing to say about her. I feel like she blazed a way for women in radio. I just think this is so exploitative of her. It's sad. It's sad to see because she's a broadcasting icon. So no matter what you think of her content or her material, she entertained people and she held her own like in the very beginning. So this is sad to see. Let's see. Apparently, so two things with Freddie Mercury. His house apparently is finally up for sale. Folks, I guess, have been waiting for a long time for that to happen. You can buy his house. And I think this is kind of weird, too. He's going to return as a hologram on stage. I don't know what I think. The company that has his back catalog filed a trademark for his name in 3D and virtual reality. And so they could have him recreated as a hologram to perform on stage. The legal filing said that the name is reserved for, quote, immersive 3D virtual augmented and mixed reality experiences and for virtual enjoyments. It's not the same. It's not the same. Is it, though? You're watching a hologram.
Yeah, no, you know you're watching a hologram, obviously. It's Freddie Mercury for crying out loud.
I'd rather watch, like, old footage of him.
But have you seen that? Some of the hologram...
Yeah, I'm totally unmoved.
It'd be pretty cool to see.
I think it's hokey. It's cringe. What are they going to do? Like, announce something for Second Life next? Oh, I could go off on that forever. A CBS News boss who signed off on firing Catherine Herridge is going to apparently get a free speech award, according to New York Post, because free speech means nothing. Yeah. The CBS News president, Ingrid Cyprian Matthews, was selected by Radio Television Digital News Association at the First Amendment Awards. I will never get an award from any of the radio broadcasting people because I'm too conservative and they hate me. The irony was not lost on these people because she literally was responsible for pushing Herridge out. And they're going to give her an award. Free speech. Free speech. Free speech. This is so dumb. Let's see here. We had the thing about the war in Mexican cartels yesterday. Milwaukee, Detroit, and St. Louis are setting warm records this February. Are they? Dallas, though, is definitely. Okay, so Dallas, the last time it was this hot in Dallas was like in 1917. Because it hit 95 yesterday. or no, 88 yesterday, 95 the day before. The temperature right now, as you can see by my turtleneck, is 44 degrees. What is happening? 95, 88, and now 44? Stop it. So they're saying that Milwaukee, Detroit, and St. Louis, they're setting them warm weather records. We have more on the way. We got to talk about AI and deep dive into Michigan. Stick with us. As we move, our partners that help bring you free radio, Black Rifle Coffee, the only coffee that I drink, honestly, because it's just the best coffee that's out there. And with Black Rifle Coffee, you are getting, it's a veteran-owned company, veteran-owned. They employ active duty and retired veterans, and they have the absolute best roast there, just period. Some of my favorites are like the Silencer Smooth. I love that. The AK-47 Espresso is great. They also have the Thin Blue Line Medium Roast. Freedom Fuel Dark Roast, always nice. I mean, there's just so much that they have. And the cool thing about the coffee club, if you join the coffee club, you can choose your favorite roast, however many you want, and you can have it shipped for free to your door. So choose how often you want it so that you never, ever run out of coffee. And I'm telling you, it's more affordable than what you're going to pay for the bougie stuff in the store. Fresh to your door, no shipping fees. You'll never run out. And you can also find the grinders and mugs and kettles, everything that you need to make the perfect cup of coffee. You can find it at Black Rifle Coffee. And when you become a member of that coffee club, use code Dana, because that's going to get you 30% off of your first subscription order. So visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Join that Black Rifle Coffee Club today. Get 30% off your first month with code Dana. Save money on high quality coffee roasted right here in the US of A. blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sure. I mean, Michigan's going to be tougher because you got a bunch of constituencies that we need that right now are grumpy, to say the least. The big Muslim community there in Michigan, they are not happy with the way that Joe Biden has been handling the situation in Gaza. And right. You also have a lot of young people of color, especially African-Americans and some African-American men, that are just frustrated in general with the state of things. And so you've got a very short period of time to get those two groups back on board. Don't forget, Donald Trump has won in Michigan before. He won.
So that's I feel like that's kind of being blown out of proportion. That's Van Jones. He's talking about the Muslim and black community. Oh, he's got to get everybody back on board, you know, with regards to Michigan. And this has to do with the conflict between Hamas and Israel. And there's a sizable Arab community in Dearborn, Michigan, in Michigan, that, you know, doesn't believe that Israel really has a right to defend itself, and they want a ceasefire. Did they ask what happened to the ceasefire from October 6th? Because you had one on October 6th, but Hamas didn't want it. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lesh here with you, bottom of this second hour. So I think it's being overblown, because I was looking at, bear with me, I got a million things here in front of me, so it'll take me a beat to get them all spread apart. So the uncommitted was barely 13% of the vote. And it took two delegates away from Biden in the primary results. And I was looking at, you know, I don't really care about the Trump Haley thing in Michigan. It was 68-26, 3% uncommitted. That was it. Four delegates for Haley, 12 delegates for Trump. It's a delegate race and he's winning right now. So I am looking at the Democrat. And it was only two uncommitted. And they were saying, well, in 2020, Biden had a narrow defeat. But this presupposes, though, as well, that these people would in any way, this voting bloc would in any way go for Trump. And it's not going to happen. It's not going to go for Trump. And you cannot, it is so dumb. And these people ought to know better. You don't compare primary behavior to general behavior, because you're dealing with two entirely different things. You're dealing with two entirely different people. You can't compare the two of them. And so I'm looking at the vote from 2020, because it was close, but not insanely close. And honestly, if I'm looking at the 13% of committeds, in a general election, I just don't think that that ends up, I mean, maybe taking a point or two away from Biden in a general election. But I don't think that these people are going to, this voting bloc is not going to go for Trump, and they're not going to allow it to where Trump actually wins in that. So in 2020, it was the 16 electoral votes in Michigan went to Biden, obviously, and he had 50.62% of the vote, whereas Trump had 47.84% of the vote. And the big, I mean, obviously, when you break everything down to identity politics, which is so dumb, if you have to, because I know the left loves doing that, if you're breaking everything down according to race, sex, whatever, I mean, this was always projected to be lean Dem or solid Dem. 538 had it as the solid Dem. I mean, it's always been like that. RCP had it as toss up, which I thought was dumb because there's no way. I think there was some bad polling that they had included in that. And all of the aggregated polls from 270 to win to 538 to elsewhere, I mean, it was pretty much on target with that. Now, in looking at the and looking at some of the, let me look at this, the voting blocks of this, you had young people, you had the Black community, you had the Arab community that voted for Biden. That's not going to change in this election, even over just this issue, because I think they would have to surmise that they would have a better chance with Biden than they would Trump. So I think it's overblown, but I think that it's overblown by Democrats and the media on purpose because they need it as an agitator. They need it as a get out the vote agitator to motivate people. If they're going to have a problem, even a small problem with a small percentage of voters, they're going to try to agitate and get out the vote some other way. But it's just, I kept hearing it over and over again. I was reading this one piece about it in that, like, for instance, the co-organizer, it's the uncommitted people that's run by Rashida Tlaib's sister. They were standing outside of Islamic centers. Like, one was standing outside the Islamic Center of Detroit, distributing pamphlets, encouraging people to vote uncommitted. There are two grassroots organizations, Listen to Michigan and Abandoned Biden. Those are the two groups. And they said that they wanted everyone to vote uncommitted so that they can push him towards more pro-Hamas policy. And Tlaib had said in a video, this is even Rashida Tlaib, she said she was, quote, proud to walk and pull in a Democrat ballot and vote and vote uncommitted. And they said that the Listen to Michigan people, they wanted 10,000 people to vote uncommitted. And they said, quote, we want to be able to wake up the next day on Wednesday today and be able to claim Michigan as a pro-Palestinian state, etc. Now, I'm looking at the rundown here. You've got, 81% for Biden, only 13%, barely 13% uncommitted. And then you add for Phillips, Dean Phillips, 2.7. 3% for Marianne Williamson. I mean, you have half for the other candidates as you would. It seems overblown, right, Kane? I feel like this is overblown.
Oh, yeah.
Entirely overblown. But they want this desperately. They want to be able to change where he is on this, to try to push him towards, like, this easy on Hamas kind of position. And I just don't see it happening. I don't see it happening. So that's where it is. Now, the other things with the Michigan primary, we said Trump obviously was pulling this up. Trump obviously ended up beating the pants off of Nikki Haley here. That's to be expected. Let's see. They barely had, 2% uncommitted. I think that was it. So it kind of went exactly as we thought it would. And I don't really see, honestly, I can't see Biden having all of that much of a problem with Michigan going into the general. if I'm being honest. I just don't. I don't, like I said, I feel like it's really overblown. It's overblown. Some of the other stuff we have, I'm going to pull this up. I keep having my bookmarking system crash on me. It's very frustrating. The AI situation. So Google is now finally saying, okay, our AI, maybe it went a little too far. They're admitting their inaccurate AI-generated images of Black founding fathers, Asian German Nazis, and female popes were unacceptable. Sundar Pichai said that Gemini AI's woke images were not acceptable in a memo to staff because people were really criticizing this. This is the Google CEO saying that the company is working around the clock to fix the issue. I don't know how they could be working around the clock to fix the issue. I'm not. I mean, someone said, can you give me a standard Nazi officer? And it literally showed them a picture of a black dude in a Nazi uniform. The memo was posted online and it said they wanted to address the issues with problematic text and image responses in Gemini. And they said that, you know, it's shown bias because they've baked it in. That's the thing. How do you unbake the bias? That's not an easy fix. That is not an easy fix at all. How do you unbake the bias in this? I don't know. I mean,
here's my thing. If they have to work around the clock because AI is making pictures of black people, imagine if AI decides it just wants to kill humanity. How many around the clocks will we have to have to fix AI at that point? Like, what are we doing?
I don't know.
What are we doing?
I don't know. But I'm just saying it is. It's the whole thing is this is the problem that we're going to have. And I don't know. They said that. So Pirate Wires, it's a tech publication. They said the reason that Gemini hasn't worked out and the reason that you have, and this is obvious, that you have all this dumb stuff is because of the people who work at Google. I mean, people who work at Google are apparently psychos. And they have stupid political views that they have to bake into their work. Thus, you get stupid generated AI images that are completely historically inaccurate. And they're trying to retcon history for bias. I mean, it's a problem. I mean, this is affecting absolutely everything. I read a thread the other day about DEI and all of that in the practice of medicine, how it's affecting even that. And I'm not talking about just, it's a guy who says he's a woman. I mean, goes beyond that, where you have people who, you know, what if you, there was some nurse practitioner or something that had tweeted out using her photo and everything that her friend was wearing a button who's a nurse was wearing a button that had pronouns on it, and the guy whom she was drawing blood from was asking her, well, why do you have pronouns on a button there? And it was an older guy, and it may have been because he didn't know. Not everyone lives on social media and plays in people's fantasy world of pretend gender. And the woman on Twitter had said, oh, well, you know, she seemed like my friend had to stick him twice to get a vein, and like wink emoji, like causing harm to someone over politics. That's psychotic.
And against the oath.
And I don't know. I worry about medicine. I worry about all kinds of stuff because all of this, it's creeping into everything. And when you have AI that people are going to be relying on for not just scientific breakthroughs, but I mean, war strategy, think about it. That's what the latest Mission Impossible was all about. You see how far the implications of this can go. And especially when you have this bias baked into it, I don't know how you unbake it. We have Florida Man on the way. Our friends over at Patriot Mobile, the only Christian conservative cell phone service in the country, they want to make sure that you're saving money in this Biden economy. And they also want to give you free activation using code Dana. They offer dependable nationwide coverage in all three major networks, so you're getting the best service in your area without funding the left. And when you switch, you're sending a message that, you know, you support U.S.-based businesses because they have a 100% U.S.-based customer service team. They're founded in Texas. They make switching easy, and they're not going to use your money against you at the ballot box. They're responsible stewards, and they make sure that they support the things that you support. Visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT and use promo code Dana to get free activation. Make the switch today. That's PatriotMobile.com/Dana, 972-PATRIOT.
It's his life mission
to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
So, first up here, a Florida man was taken into custody after climbing a cell tower and then live streaming. This was in Hillsborough County, Florida. A Florida man was arrested after he climbed a giant cell tower. Deputies said law enforcement was called around 7 o'clock Saturday night. A man climbing the tower. When they identified him and responded to the site where he was climbing back down, he reached the ground, was taken into custody. A deputy can be heard asking him in the video, "You made it all the way to the top?" And the guy replies, "Yeah." Yeah, this, why? To live stream? Didn't you read the story about the chick who like fell off a cliff because she was trying to get a selfie, yeah, like all for social media? The Florida man accused of trying to steal a plane didn't get very far. According to the Lee County Sheriff's Office, investigators were called to the airport to help Lee County Port Authority with a past burglary. They say two maintenance workers noticed a plane in the grass with a broken wing and an open door, and it was supposed to be on a designated ramp. Then they found all kinds of stuff, magazines with the ammunition, a ballistic vest. Surveillance video showed the suspect, identified as Bruce Matthew Plummer, getting on and off a plane, turning on the lights of another, moving a plane onto the grass, out of camera view. What did he want to do? He had all kinds of stuff in his record, several DUIs, violation of probation. He's charged with, a lot. Armed burglary of an unoccupied conveyance, grand theft over $100,000. I didn't know that this was its own charge. Possession of a bulletproof vest while committing certain offenses. Oh. I didn't know that was a whole other charge, did you?
I guess that makes sense, but yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, that seems kind of, why? I think that's kind of a fruity charge.
Well, remember that LA case back in the 90s where those guys that were in full body armor was just trying to rob that bank and the cops couldn't stop them because every time they'd hit them with bullets, they would just keep going.
Yeah,
so it makes sense, I guess, but I'd never heard of it.
Yeah, that's a weird thing. Let's see here. Oh, I got a couple more. I'm not reading this one. Not going to read that one either. Some of these are just, no, we're not doing it. This one, a Florida man defrauded Home Depot of $100,000. Investigators say they were scanning this. He'd scan stuff, walk out with other things. Like he'd scan something like the Henry floor patch, which cost $9.98, and walk out with white roof coating, which cost $248. So he had like a whole scheme that he was doing. So he'd scan for something and then he would, you know, he'd take something else that was obviously more of value. This was in Miami Beach and Orlando. It was in a few things. So this isn't you, Steve, right? You're not a Florida man. Bets $50,000 that there would be a streaker during the Super Bowl, goes to the game and streaks, and then loses $374 in winnings after he bragged about it on the internet. So a guy, I mean, it's kind of funny. He bet that there would be a streaker at the Super Bowl, and then he gate crashed the Super Bowl and streaked because he bet on that there would be, and so he made it happen. And then he bragged about it online. He boasted in interviews that he would make all this money, and he had placed $50,000 on someone doing it. And he was bragging about it, and then he should have kept quiet. Now all of his pants are frozen. They're investigating and all that stuff. So that's so dumb. Why would you do that? Why would you do that? I mean, you know, he could have just stayed quiet. And then a woman gets a chilly reception from Coconut Creek police. She robbed a Dairy Queen. Of all the things to rob, Allison Fetting, 44, of Palm Beach County, walked into a Dairy Queen, brandished a gun, demanded money. No one was hurt. She was taken into custody. I mean, why at a Dairy Queen of all places? Stick with us. Third hour on the way.
In the main, I caution against conflating immigration and crime. The data demonstrates that the two are not connected. Because the impact of federal immigration policy on localities has been under such consistent discussion in recent months, I do want to say a few words about this. It's my 18th year as a local government policymaker, and my work has overlapped with four U.S. presidencies and numerous iterations of Congress. All of them have failed to reach agreement on how to handle immigration.
So conflating immigration and crime, the two are not connected. Okay, no one's talking about immigration and crime. We're talking about illegal immigration, which is a crime, you absolute blockhead. That's the Athens mayor in Georgia. That's why it's called illegal immigration. You don't call someone who breaks into your house someone who's just visiting, do you? Can you imagine just saying that? This community is going through it. Good heavens. Welcome back to the show. Top of this third hour, Dana Lash with you. That's a bad sound bite. And then the residents, this is Audio Soundbite 17, because this was at the press conference this morning. They were demanding that he resign. They were not happy. Listen to this. They're infuriated.
City doesn't track with either of those. And so that term means different things to different people depending on the context of the discussion.
We're here to listen. You're a guilty and got blood on your hands for this murder, sir.
Many of the aspects that are ascribed to sanctuary cities.
We know what sanctuary
are things
means.
That are disallowed by Georgia law.
Sanctuary policy, which is what we do.
And we contribute a document every year to the Georgia Department of Audits indicating that we do not correspond to these definitions under state law.
Yes, you do.
And no policies have been adopted
Please
by the mayor and commission that have created sanctuary city status
sir,
in Athens.
Oof. You need to resign.
One protocol
resign.
That sometimes
resign.
Arises.
Resign now.
Go away. Resign.
You will allow
protocol,
this to happen, sir.
One protocol that sometimes arises is...
Yeah, they were, because he started off, well, I mean, you heard the audio that I played. Coming into this, he started off saying, quote, he cautions against conflating immigration and crime. But don't insult our intelligence and act like illegal immigration is the same thing as legal immigration. They're two different things. You can't just drop the qualifiers and say immigration. So he deserved to be shouted down. Good on those citizens because they're doing their civic duty. It's now what is this, Kane, that you're telling me in Slack?
Cuts 22 and 23 are flashback. There's some flashback audio of. This is Athens,
Ooh.
Georgia's DA.
Yes.
And you're kind of wondering.
Deborah Gonzalez.
Imagine you'd ask yourself, how would they get into a situation like they're in today? Listen to this.
And we can do that because look around you. Look to your left. Look to your right. These are your neighbors. These are your colleagues. These are your families. And these are your friends. And yes, every immigrant is a friend.
Okay, we're not talking about immigrants. We're talking about people who break the law to sneak into the country, which is an entirely different thing. So that's insulting.
Yeah. And then we have a 30-second clip of her on a Zoom call, it appears, saying that her changing decisions, right? District attorney decisions were changed. And she would take into account
her charging decisions,
the collateral consequences of undocumented, quote unquote, immigrants. Listen to her.
As for the future of ICE, you know, ICE was created after 9/11. We did not have ICE, right? Before 9/11. And you know what? We didn't need it then. And I truly believe that we don't need it now. What we've done is we've criminalized people just trying to get a better life, you know, and it's the same as what we've done with the police, with militarizing them, with giving them so much money that then they come into these community thinking that they have absolutely all of the authority to do whatever they want, however
they
want to, whoever.
I mean,
they want.
I didn't think that we could find two AOCs, but we did. That's asinine. So if you think that people can just, if they can just do something to benefit themselves, then what if it benefits somebody to break into your house and steal your stuff? I mean, if that's the determining factor in weighing whether or not something is justified and something is legal, then it is just because somebody wants to. Okay. Well, what if somebody wants your car? And they just throw you out in the road and take your car. What if they want to break into your house? No, no, no. You laid out a different rule of measure. Now you wonder how it's possible that you have a 22-year-old student on the dean's list who is so brutally murdered by an illegal alien that her skull is caved in and she is disfigured. Her body is disfigured. How that can even set up to happen. And then, of course, you know, remember we had Katie Porter the other day saying, well, this is just one instance. It's just one instance. One instance. Did you hear about the illegal immigrant from El Salvador who shot and killed a 2-year-old boy? Now, it's weird because at first it seemed like it was, you know, maybe gang activity, a drive-by. But, and they thought that maybe the toddler and his mother, they were literally in a walk in the park. That maybe they were caught in the crossfire. But now law enforcement says the gunfire was intended for the little boy and his mom. This guy had several all kinds of run-ins with the law. ICE had already lodged a detainer on him. And the local police department there refused to honor the detainer. They refused to honor it. He was in the country illegally. He was arrested in Maryland. And police refused to honor ICE's detainer. And they released him back into the public. And he shot and killed a little the mother and the little 2-year-old boy. It's Jeremy Caceres. He was out on the walk in the park with his mom and killed his little boy. This is just wild. It's wild. Just one instance. You know, just one instance, that's all. Just one instance. Like the guy from Venezuela who illegally entered the country and was in El Paso. And he was released after he was detained once and again. He's released and he starts traveling all over. And then he attacks and sexually assaults a teenage girl. And he was released in El Paso September of last year. You know, one instance, just one instance. I mean, Molly Tibbetts, just one instance. Kate Steinle, just one instance. I mean, this young woman in Georgia, just one instance. It keeps adding up over and over again. It's not just one instance. Now, in the meantime, I got to play this audio. Because Biden, when was this? When did he make this remark?
Is this the one I just put in
there? Yeah.
Then, yeah, he just did.
So this is, it's only 10 seconds. You need to listen to this. I want you to listen to this, and I want you then to ask yourself, as you're hearing it, what was happening with the Democrat Party? What were they demanding right at the time that that was happening, that Biden's talking about? Listen to this.
As was referenced, during the pandemic, states and cities saw violent crime rising. And their budgets were strained as they faced deep cuts in law enforcement and public safety.
So what was happening at that exact same time? Remember, it was a lockdown. You were supposed to stay at home because the virus could spread, which we all found it was a lie. But some people could actually go out in perfectly, totally peaceful, giant protest where some buildings were accidentally set on fire. And then what else? What were Democrats demanding at this time? Kane, what were they demanding?
Defunding the police. That was the biggest thing. While buildings were burning, they were asking you
mostly
to support
protest.
Yeah, to defund the police.
So Biden says budgets were strained. They were facing deep cuts in law enforcement and public safety because Democrats were pushing to defund the police.
And that was a singular party thing. That wasn't like bipartisan opinion.
Yeah.
That was Democrats.
It wasn't shared.
Nope.
It wasn't a shared thing. Wow. We all remember that, right? Like, we all remember how that worked out, how that happened. We all remember. We saw it happen. I'm telling you. Now, I got a culture thing before we get into headlines. I don't watch the Oscars. I don't. I'm not. I used to watch it because I like to watch people's outfits, and I like to see who is the gothiest of them all. Because you always get somebody who really pushes the envelope. A lot of red carpet dressing, so boring, and everybody plays it safe. I'm a chick. I like to look at this stuff, right? I don't really see half of the stuff that they put out because most everything's garbage. But I actually may watch at least one thing at the Oscars, just because I thought it might be hysterical. Now, I'm going to tell you something I'm not proud of. I wanted to see what all of the... I didn't actually make it through the movie. I wanted to see what everybody was talking about with the movie, because everybody was arguing, and some of my conservative friends were disagreeing with each other because they were saying that the film's director is apparently so self-unaware that she accidentally made a giant... Basically, the film is a giant epitaph for third-wave feminism. And she didn't realize that she did it. And I wanted to really see... if that was the case. I could not make it through the movie. It was one of the worst things. It went on for way too long. It was really boring. But I will say that Ryan Gosling, all you had to do was just put his scenes together and call it Ken. And it would be, you know, it would be a blockbuster. It would probably get all the Oscars. Just saying. So anyway, the reason I said I was going to watch one part of the Oscars is because he's apparently performing at the Oscars. Now, remember, he got an Oscar nomination and Greta Gerwig, the director, didn't, and Margot Robbie, who played Barbie, didn't get it, and everyone was so mad. They're like, can you believe Ken got it? Can you believe Ryan Gosling got it? It says sexist. Or maybe it's because you guys, I mean, her performance as Barbie was not the same as like her performance in I, Tonya. They were two different things. One, Oscar-worthy. This one, she's, come on. Not the same, guys. It doesn't, just because something translates into dollars at the box office does not mean it's a good performance. And I can't even believe I'm defending the Academy on this. I feel like I need to jump off my roof now. But he's going to perform I'm Just Ken, which got nominated for Best Original Song at the Oscars. And I actually am going to watch that because he's hysterical. He is absolutely, I don't get into chick flicks. My favorite chick flick is Death Proof. Go watch it. It's one of Tarantino's best work. Kurt Russell's in it. It's a brilliant film. That's my favorite chick flick is Death Proof. Yeah. That to me is a chick flick. And the stunts in it alone are just sweet. Anyway, isn't he always like a romantic lead? That's like what he always plays. And so I never but he was so smarmy in this movie, it was hysterical. So now I'm gonna watch him do this. I'm gonna watch this at the Oscars. I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm gonna watch him perform this. And also because you know it's gonna make all the third waivers mad. They're mad because he got nominated for best supporting actor or some cat, whatever, and none of the other chicks did. So apparently he's gonna do it. Mark Ronson co-wrote the song. He used to work with Amy Winehouse. He helped her get real big. So I'm curious to see this. Are you good? I'm going to watch this. Are you going to watch this part?
I haven't seen any, even an inkling of the Barbie movie, nor...
Oh, I wanted to die. I mean, I didn't even get all the way through it. I got maybe a little bit past when they... I mean, I don't even think I got halfway through.
I think I've always resigned now to these big shows where if there's one singular thing on these shows that I may want to see, I'm not still watching the show. I'm still not watching, but I'll see the clip on Twitter. Later.
I'm going to wait and I'll just kind of keep an eye on Twitter. And when people are talking about him getting on stage, I'll flip it over and rewind it back and I'll watch it.
Yeah,
and then that's it. Because I can't sit through the whole thing. I'll die. And I'll take all of you with me. I'm kidding.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Beverly Hills middle schoolers, in the most 90210 thing I can ever imagine, are now, they've discovered a new terrible form of bullying where they get AI to create nude images of classmates. It's the Beverly Vista Middle School. And they said that an undisclosed number of these AI images have been reported by students at the middle school last week. And they were being created and distributed by other students using these AI generated images that superimposes faces of students onto AI generated nude bodies. And they said more victims are being identified. And, I mean, we're talking 7th and 8th grade. You need to beat your kids. You need to be whooping their backsides. This is not the time for soft parenting. Good night. A McDonald's patron punches a worker for touching a soft drink lid. Yeah, I heard about this, but I'm more interested in the norovirus outbreak. It's apparently real bad. It's a bad digestive thing. And the Northeast has been hit hard. It's like a stomach flu. Wash your hands. 2A issues before SCOTUS next.
Craving a daily dose of intellectual adrenaline? Look no further than the Dana Show podcast, where curiosity meets courage, by following on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, it's neither necessary nor sufficient to fire the weapon. The trigger is the device that initiates the firing.
Here's what I'm trying to say. You've, and I appreciate your, you know, going down this road of hypotheticals with me. But if pushing one button and holding a trigger is a machine gun, then a device that works by pushing the barrel, the front of the gun, essentially, I don't know about these things, and holding the trigger, seems again to me to essentially do the same thing. And that is how everybody uses these devices. Like, I mean, maybe you could use the device differently, but the entire point of this device is that you exert forward pressure and you have your finger on the trigger and then a torrent of bullets shoots out. So I don't understand why it's any different.
Heaven help us all with this. That is Sonia Sotomayor from the oral arguments. Can I just say, the feeling that I get when I listen to this is the same feeling that I would get if I have, like, I don't know, like, you know, a dram of moonshine or something, except without the benefit of alcohol. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, what in God's green earth did I just hear? Again, Justice Sotomayor, the oral arguments in Garland v. Cargill, which is, for those who maybe don't know what that case means, that's the bump stock case, right? That's the bump stock case. And if you're unfamiliar with the case, Michael Cargill, who's going to join us in just a moment, he's the owner of Central Texas Gunworks, right? And he got two bump stocks. This was like a few years ago, had to surrender them to the ATF, and then he immediately filed suit in Western District of Texas challenging the rule, and we're glad that he did. He joins us now via Skype. I saw the picture. First off, Michael, thank you for fighting the good fight, my friend. I saw the photo of you going towards SCOTUS, the Supreme Court building, this morning. I mean, it is on. I want to ask you first, I mean, welcome to the show. But how do you feel it went today? What was your general impression?
I thought it went really good. I thought my attorney did the best he possibly could in, you know, just fighting off, you know, crazy things that were coming from some of the justices there. He did a great job of, you know, handling their hypothetical questions and, you know, and they're just weird things and trying to get them to understand how guns actually work.
Yeah. And this, so the way that I understand it, in, I was looking at SCOTUS blog and looking at some of the live tweets of what the justices were saying. And then, of course, we were listening in on the audio. It seems like a particularly the progressive justices don't even understand the mechanics of how, even excluding the bump stock, they don't even understand the mechanics of how a firearm, what makes the bullet come out in layman's terms. And right. I'm listening to the responses that they had to your attorney. And at one point, Kane and I were looking at each other like, we're going to jump off my roof. If you're, God love your attorney, because this man had so much patience, had more patience than anybody I've ever heard. But it came down to like function. And I think it was Justice Gorsuch that made the observation, you know, like people can, you know, squeeze the trigger. You can't function it. Like you can't, that's the person. It's like the same, it's a huge difference. And it seemed like that's what the focus was on for like 2 hours.
Yes, the entire day was all about the function of the trigger. You know, one action of the trigger, one round goes out, you know, that's a semi-automatic. An action of the trigger, more than one round goes out, that's a machine gun. You know, it was hard to get them to understand, you know, a few of them to understand exactly how machine guns work, how triggers work, and the fact you need an auto sear to make that work. You know, it was just really frustrating. But I think my attorney did a wonderful job in explaining that and laying it all out.
Yeah, and it seemed like I think Sotomayor was arguing or intimating somehow that the rate of fire with a semi-auto using a bump stock is the exact same. You know, it's a fully automatic, as a machine gun. That's what I was hearing from them. Are you happy that, because the case, I mean, you're obviously taking issue with the statutory interpretation that the ATF is applying to this. And I saw some people saying, oh, well, why didn't Cargill make this about a huge fight about the Second Amendment? But after, Michael, hearing those judges' interpretations or understanding of the mechanics of this, aren't you glad that they're not making like a whole determination about all of Second Amendment? Because, I mean, it seems like they're very limited in their knowledge.
That's correct. If we would have gone down that road, that's a whole nother animal. We would have been at another 2 hours. We still would have been sitting there right now trying to explain this. So we don't want to go down the road talking about the Second Amendment. Just focus on, you know, the definition of what a machine gun is, and then focus on, and I'm actually surprised they didn't bring up the fact that the ATF, an agency within the federal government, cannot create a right law. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think they're dead set. They're set on that. Yeah. There's a possibility we could get a 7-3 decision out of this. There's a possibility we can get a, something else, 6-4. You know, so we'll see what happens.
The case is submitted. When do you? Because usually it's in the summer that they come back with their.
Yeah, I'm sorry, 6-3. Yeah.
Yeah. So the case is submitted, from what I understand. Usually, when do you expect the decision from the justices? Because I know I think it's in the summers when it's SCOTUS season.
Yeah. Correct. So there's a possibility we could hear something as early as May. We could hear something back in June. They're going to go back and forth and assign what they think about this. And I think they already know, just judging by the questions that were asked. I think we kind of know which way everyone's leaning on this court.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Like, particularly Amy Coney Barrett Justice Barrett and Justice Gorsuch, is because they were the ones, to me, that seemed to be going back to how it is that the ATF can essentially do Congress's job in creating law. And knowing what, you know, how the pistol brace thing was determined, is that giving you confidence in how they're going to perhaps come down on this aspect of the on that with this with bump stocks?
Yes, to me it was all about the questions that were not asked. You know, they didn't ask about the ATF itself and creating right law. That was not asked. So I'm confident that, you know, they're going to side with my attorneys, with my side on that argument. And so now I think the big whole thing was about, you know, machine guns. What's the definition of machine gun? And clearly, you know, what we heard today is we heard a justice at the very end there just going so far left that it didn't make any sense whatsoever, to the point that it was frustrating that we need to take this justice out to the gun range and teach her how to shoot.
Mm, yeah. And I want to clarify myself, too, because the quote about the torrent of bullets, that audio that we played, that was Justice Jackson and not Sotomayor. So I want to make sure, Ketanji Brown Jackson, I want to make sure I get that correct. We're talking to our friend Michael Cargill, who is in before Supreme Court. Not everybody can say that. He was arguing rights before the Supreme Court on this decision. I know some of these justices, you know, obviously they have poker faces, but I was encouraged to hear, as you said, you were thinking more of the questions that weren't asked as opposed to those that were. And for those who don't know, this is about the bump stock issue. And what gets me about this is that the argument has always been in making you turn over your property to the government, that this somehow changes the function of a firearm when it does not. And it was the same argument that they used for pistol braces. It's the same. They think that you can just attach, this item on and it immediately changes the cycling, the rate of fire, all of the mechanics. And clearly it doesn't. But that's the crux of this. That's what kicked this all off for those who haven't been following since the beginning.
Right. They were focusing on the rate of fire. They were focusing on a lot of different things instead of, let's go to the basics here. Let's go back to, you know, civics. Let's go back to, what is the definition of a machine gun? How does a machine gun work? What are the mechanics of a machine gun? Is it a person the machine gun? Or we're talking about the trigger that actually makes more than one round go out. And that's what it's all about. And, you know, we can't get too far away from that. If anything else, we need to go back to Congress, and Congress needs to change the definition of what a machine gun is. And they haven't done that. They haven't touched this at all. So it's clear the definition of what a machine gun is. And that's it. That is, if I pull that trigger, one action of the trigger, more than one round goes out, that is a machine gun. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're faced with today. And that's what the Supreme Court is going to have to look at.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the other clarification that they had been discussing. Talking with Michael Cargill, what I noticed with this case as well, and I tell people that these are usually formulas, and you can, whether it's, you know, bump stock today, it could be a different variable tomorrow. If, you know, something like this is allowed to stand, what stops, like, any government agency? What stops them from saying, okay, well, now we're just going to basically reinterpret the definition of semi-auto or include semi-auto in full auto. We're just going to reinterpret the definition of this without any pushback or any kind of any legislation from Congress or without any oversight at all whatsoever. And that's what you're challenging.
Right. And what I've been trying to explain to people is the reason we didn't go down the road of the Second Amendment issue. One, my attorneys are not Second Amendment attorneys. They're constitutional attorneys. And then the other thing is the fact that, you know, we need to focus on, you know, it's a bigger picture. It's not just about firearms. It's not just about guns. It's about an administrative agency.
Yes.
You know, can this agency, whether it's the EPA, whether it's OSHA, whatever agency you pick, U.S. Commerce Department, can they create a right law? Oh, do they need Congress to do that? And let's go back to the basics of civics 101. You know, how does a bill become law? A bill becomes law because a bill is made in Congress. You know, someone writes that bill, they vote on that bill, it goes to committee, it goes to both houses of Congress there. It goes, you know, they vote on it, they pass it, it goes to the president signs it, and that's how it becomes law. Not because an agency within the federal government creates a right law.
That's exactly right. And we saw that too, like over the pandemic, when you had the CDC issue lease rent, you didn't get a moratorium on the tax you had to pay on your property, but you know, people who, you know, had renters, that renters got a moratorium on having to pay rent for that property, and the CDC, and that was overturned because, to your point, an agency, a government agency, no oversight, no accountability, they can't do the job that Congress does. So until this time, Michael, until we get a determination from the Supreme Court, you're in this legal it's a legal purgatory when it comes to ownership of bump stocks, correct?
That's correct. And even when the Supreme Court decide this case, we're still fighting another case. We're fighting two cases at the same time. So we have the case in the United States Supreme Court to decide whether or not, you know, can the ATF create a right law? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, what's the definition of machine gun? And then we have to go back to the lower court and fight the lower court, because that lower court justice, that judge has said that, you know what? Hey, Michael Cargill, you won the case. But we're not going to give you any relief whatsoever. You know, do I get my bump stocks back? He didn't say. Are all bump stocks legal? He didn't say. So he didn't give me any relief whatsoever. So we're still going to have to fight this case. Even when we win the United States Supreme Court, we still have to fight it in the lower court still today.
It's going to be interesting to see who is in the majority on this. And I would love to have you back, because if this is allowed to stand, we're going to see, I would imagine we will see a flurry of other restrictions coming out from the ATF on firearm owners. I think this is just maybe the second step after pistol braces. We'll start seeing more of that from the ATF. And with this current administration, I think we'd see it probably before fall. Honestly, Michael Cargill, I would love to have you back. We got to talk about this more. We'll await the decision from the Supreme Court, but we appreciate you doing this because you're taking on a fight that benefits every American, and you're right there at the tip of the spear. So thank you, my friend. God bless you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. I love you. And as always, more guns equals less crime.
There you go. Right there. Thank you so much, Michael. Appreciate you. And we'll follow up with him as we roll towards SCOTUS season, because as you know, it's always like late spring, early summer. That's when Supreme Court rolls out with those decisions. And this will be no different. And he's right. And I love the way that he explained, too, that this is really, you can't have an overarching 2A case on this. It has to be very, very siloed for that specific reason. And like I said, honestly, after hearing some of the justices like Ketanji Brown Jackson and Sotomayor and others, you know, express a lot of confusion over the mechanics of how this works, would you really want them being able to affect that broadly of a decision? I wouldn't. So I get it. I appreciate what he's doing.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
Brandon Judd, the president of the National Border Patrol Council, the main union for the Border Patrol agents, will actually be joining Donald Trump on Thursday for his border visit. And he said he actually did not receive an invite from the White House. And we were wondering what your response to that is and if there was any reason why.
So look, I will have more to share on what Thursday is going to look like. We'll have more to share on who is going to be joining the president. I don't have anything beyond what I just laid out, but it is a fact that the Border Patrol Union did indeed support the bipartisan proposal that came out of the Senate, and I think that's important to state. I can't speak to him being with the former president in Texas. That's for him, obviously, to speak to. And we certainly will have more as we get closer to Thursday.
Yeah, well, that's tomorrow now. They don't know. We don't know about that. The Border Patrol Union was blasting the, what is it? They his visit because he's going to one of the more sanitized parts of the border. KJP, I wanted to point this out too. She quoted POTUS in making remarks today. He had said, quote, last year, the United States has had one of the lowest rates of all violent crime in more than 50 years. He added murder, rape, aggravated assault, robbery all dropped sharply, along with burglary, property, crime, and theft. It matters. Yeah. And I retweeted the gif of the guy pointing at his head because the whole thing is, you know, if you stop charging for crimes, then you reduce crimes. Ah, yeah, you reduce it. Yeah. All right. Kane, today in stupidity.
All right. It is going to have to be the Supreme Court of the United States. This sounds like Sotomayor. Some people are saying it's Ketanji Jackson Brown.
Yeah. SCOTUS Block said it was, but it sounds like Sotomayor.
The people deciding on your 2A rights have this much knowledge about guns. Listen to this.
Maybe you could use the device differently, but the entire point of this device is that you exert forward pressure and you have your finger on the trigger and then a torrent of bullets shoots out.
Ooh, that's not how bump stocks
torrent
work. You just what does she say? Put pressure on the barrel and then a torrent of bullets
fly out. You just lean on it a bit. It makes it shootier.
These people are making decisions about your 2A rights.
You know, and you can probably, if you throw the gun while you're shooting it, but like still holding onto it, throw the bullets faster. Yeah.
That's too deadly.
Yeah, there you go. Folks, our government, that does it for us today. Make sure you sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. Find us on Facebook, like and subscribe. I'll be back behind the mic with you tomorrow.